Hey, What Next listeners, it's Mary Harris. This fall, you're going to be bombarded with election news. And we're here to make sure to report on the big stuff, but also the stories that are going to affect you, especially ones that might fall through the cracks. If you just started listening to us recently on Spotify, hey, welcome. We hope you're going to take a moment to follow us so you can get a dose of that tongue-in-cheek analysis that Slate is famous for. And to our loyal and longtime listeners, thanks. We're going to be with you through all of this, no matter how bananas the election cycle gets. All right, back to the news.
Something I've learned this week in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, is that it did not take me very long to want to play hooky from the Republican National Convention. If you've watched on TV, you might get a sense of why. Every speaker is repeating similar talking points about inflation, making America great once again. I cured my boredom, for lack of a better word, by driving an hour and a half west to an elections event with no jumbotrons, no balloon drop, featuring the kind of politicians who are not exactly household names. Not yet, anyway.
Good morning. I'm Ish Malozan, your Dane County District Attorney.
This county DA is giving his spiel in a modest municipal building in the small town of Oregon, Wisconsin. Just about every clerk in Dane County is here, about 50 people, primarily middle-aged women in practical shoes. They administer elections here.
Most of you probably haven't had interactions with me, which is probably a good thing.
The DA is speaking here because he's worried. This purple county is home to a whole lot of Wisconsin's Democrats. And as a result, it's become a target for election deniers. Sometimes these folks ask their questions nicely. Sometimes they don't. But when they ask, they're asking the clerks. Today, this group will hear from the sheriff, a 911 representative, and this prosecutor. All of them repeating the same thing. We've got your back.
It does. All right. I can tell you for certainty, we do not have enough election fraud within our system to compromise the result of an election. The reason I can say that is all of you send all of your complaints or questions or irregularities to me.
The clerks are advised how to sort their mail, how to get the Department of Homeland Security to inspect their space. They are told to replace doorknobs with key cards so they can track who's coming in and out. On election day, they're told to prepare for an active shooter and run drills in case they have to abandon their office space.
Right? And don't say, well, maybe it's not important, or I don't want to bother somebody, without you in your positions doing your job, this country does not exist. That's how important you are and what you do is to all of us.
Only a few thousand votes separate a presidential winner from a presidential loser here, which is why the people in this room are becoming used to election-related drama. In 2016, Jill Stein asked for a recount in this county. In 2020, Donald Trump did the same. Are you looking forward to Election Day?
No, not at all.
This is Kurt. He's been working as a deputy clerk since 2019.
And then we're fielding questions from our own residents that know us. They're our neighbors. And they're wondering, is it safe? Is my ballot? Well, of course it's safe. It's always been safe. What I've seen decline over the years is the faith in the system more than the system itself. I think the system still is solid. If the average person knew how many times a single ballot gets tabulated, counted, verified, and double-checked, they'd understand how difficult it is to actually put a grossly fraudulent ballot in. There's so many checks and balances.
Come election day, Kurt and all the other municipal clerks in this room are going to collect up their ballots and pass them on to the county clerk to get certified. That clerk's name is Scott McDonnell. He's based in the college town of Madison.
I do think Madison is particularly a target nationally. But that's the thing.
Why
for
do you
us.
Think that is?
I think the blue parts of purple counties are the ones who are most at risk. So Philadelphia, you know, in Pittsburgh, Madison, Milwaukee, Phoenix.
Once the ballots get to Scott, he says, people from all over the country are suddenly going to be laser focused on his office.
It's national. Hmm. And so the emails come from all over the place. And the threats and the phone calls and the people drive. It was like a destination wedding, you know, at our last recount. There's people, realtors flying in from Texas. Oh, yeah, on our own plane. Yeah, we saw people, some of the people who were at ours, they were then at January 6th.
The Trump campaign plans to have 5,000 election observers in Wisconsin come November. Scott says he's okay with that. Most of the time, once observers see how things work, they're reassured.
The problem is there's just not enough. The internet works at a million miles an hour, and we don't.
It's funny. Do you feel like once you've like reassured someone, like someone new's coming in and you're reassuring them?
Yeah, it's like picking up sand on a beach. That's what it feels like.
I wonder what your biggest fear is about November.
There's a clerk's prayer, you know, may the best candidate win by a lot. So, you know, I kind of want whoever wins to win. And
this is Wisconsin. Last time.
I know that doesn't happen lately. So I want to get back to a place where people accept when they win and when they lose. That's what we really need.
Yeah. Do you think that's going to happen this year?
I don't know.
Are you expecting a recount again this year?
Yeah, we're planning on a recount.
One of the clerks we talked to said recount's a bad word in your industry.
Well, we've gotten good at it.
Today on the show, we all know Wisconsin is a battleground state. We'll talk about how it got that way. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next from right outside the Republican National Convention. Stick around.
This show is brought to you by Discover. Have you heard about Doublenomics? It's okay if you haven't. It's extremely niche and practiced by Discover. Here's an example. Discover automatically doubles the cash back earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. That means with Discover, you could turn $150 cash back into $300. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Former President Donald Trump has rewritten the rules of how the American justice system treats our nation's most powerful people. But long before this year's historic Supreme Court term, or even his presidency, Trump developed an approach to the law that has shielded him from legal accountability on everything from taxes to fraud to discrimination. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. All through August, Amicus will dive deep into Trump's history of bending the law to his will in a series we're calling The Law According to Trump. Hosted by award-winning journalist Andrea Bernstein, the series will highlight the tactics that led to Trump's recurring legal battles and examine the legal blueprint he used to fight back to better understand how he'll continue to capitalize on his victories and fight to overturn his defeats, whether he does it from inside or outside the White House. Listen to The Law According to Trump on Amicus from Slate.
Ari Berman is a national voting rights correspondent. That means he's reported on Wisconsin for a long, long time.
Longer than both of my two kids have been alive.
Does it surprise you that in Wisconsin, at the same time the Republicans are finalizing their nominations in Milwaukee, county clerks are being trained to combat both disinformation and real bodily threats on Election Day?
It doesn't surprise me because Wisconsin has been the epicenter of so many fights we've been having about voting and elections for the past 4+ years.
Can you explain that? Like, you've made the case that trouble's been brewing in Wisconsin for more than a decade at this point. So can you take me back in time? Like, where would you start?
I would start after the 2010 election.
It's shaping up as a big Republican night as major networks project their taking control of the House in this midterm election of 2010.
Republicans took control of Wisconsin for the first time in decades.
This is when Republican Governor Scott Walker was elected?
Yes, when Republican Governor Scott Walker and a new Republican majority in the legislature was elected, and they dramatically changed the state's voting system.
Tonight, I want to tell every worker, every family, and every business, big or small in this state, that you have an ally in the governor's office. Wisconsin is open for business.
How long did it take for Republicans to redraw Wisconsin maps and sort of upend how voting worked?
Not long. Basically, right after the 2010 census came out, Republicans drew new redistricting maps for the state, but they did it in a very unusual way. In the past, maps had been drawn at the state capitol. That's generally speaking where the business of government occurs. Instead, Republicans went across the street to a GOP law firm. They had an office that they called a map room, which was basically like a secure bunker, basically, where they drew new political districts in secret. They made Republican legislators sign non-disclosure agreements. They didn't allow any Democrats to look at the maps. Republican aides said, basically, there may be public comments on the maps. Ignore the public comments. Only pay attention to what's happening in this secret room. And they basically rammed through the maps with no hearings, no public input, nothing. And essentially, it created an entirely different state.
Yeah, what did these maps look like? Like, if I saw them, would it be clear they were gerrymandered?
In some places, yes. In some places, no. But what they did is they surgically targeted Democrats with unbelievable precision. I went to one state Senate district in Racine, Wisconsin, which is south of Milwaukee, that had been heavily gerrymandered. And the way they did that was they literally took a Republican state senator and they had his house in one district, his district, and the rest of his neighbors who were Democrats in an entirely different district. Because what they wanted to do is they wanted to draw the district so that his house would stretch all the way to the Republican countryside and be a Republican district, but his Democratic neighbors, who he lived right next to, would be an entirely different district so that they basically couldn't vote against him. That's how surgical the gerrymandering in Wisconsin was.
Did the Wisconsin voting public like these changes?
No, I mean, I don't think they even really knew what was happening. I mean, basically, there was a wave election in 2010. It was a very bad election for Democrats. Republicans won these huge majorities. But I think people thought, okay, there'll be competitive elections again in 2012 or 2014 or whenever, because Wisconsin always had a history of competitive elections. And you knew Wisconsin was going to be a swing state in the next presidential election. But what ended up occurring was there were no competitive elections for the state legislature anymore. Basically, what happened was you would have, no matter how people voted, Republicans would get 60% or more of the seats. And just to give you one really incredible example, in the 2018 election, which was a very good year for Democrats when Democrats in Wisconsin won every major statewide office, Republicans in the state assembly in Wisconsin, which is the lower house, they got 46% of the statewide vote for the state assembly, but 64% of seats in the legislature. I mean, that's unheard of, that you could get a minority of votes, but you could have an incredible majority number of seats. I mean, that's how bad the gerrymandering was.
Yeah, I mean, you single out 2018 as this turning point year. That's when a Democrat was elected governor, right?
It was a really big deal, because what it did is it ended the Scott Walker era in Wisconsin. And of course, Scott Walker was a notorious figure because he went after unions, and that led to huge protests at the Capitol. And he was this very, very divisive figure. And to actually get him out of office was a massive shift, or should have been at least a massive shift, in Wisconsin politics.
Huh. But this was kind of the state of play in Wisconsin going into the 2020 election. Like, this conservative supermajority in state government, also a conservative majority of the state Supreme Court, but this Democrat governor. Democrats do win the state. Biden wins the state by like 20,000 votes or so. But like right afterwards, there were accusations of voter fraud.
Exactly. I mean, basically, this Democratic crisis had been brewing for basically a decade. And then Trump kicked things into overdrive.
We're way up in Michigan, won the state. And in Wisconsin, we did likewise fantastically well. And that got whittled down. In every case, they got whittled down.
He filed what was really an unprecedented lawsuit. He tried to throw out 221,000 votes only in Milwaukee and Madison, the two largest blue counties in the state. So he literally basically said there's only voter fraud in these two places where it just so happens all the Democrats in Wisconsin live. And the amazing thing was not just the lawsuit, but it almost succeeded. It was rejected 4-3. By the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which had a conservative majority, which meant that one of the justices, essentially the swing justice, the John Roberts of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, essentially, had to vote with the Democrats to reject this attempt by Trump to overturn the election. So I don't think people realize that in Wisconsin, Trump almost succeeded in overturning the results, which would have led to not just a full-blown state crisis, but would have led to a full-blown constitutional crisis. And so that really was a tipping point in terms of the lengths that Republicans would go to try to subvert democracy in the state.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because in your reporting over many years, you've basically laid out how Wisconsin, with all of its gerrymandering, created a blueprint for Republicans elsewhere to use to maintain control of state houses, even when they weren't really winning the popular vote. And I guess I was surprised looking back at 2020 that Wisconsin was also incredibly involved in the effort to disrupt the 2020 election. Like, it was the spiritual home of the fake electors plot, which was like, let's get some people to say Trump won. And then if we somehow win all these lawsuits, they'll be there and we'll have Trump in office still. And that started in Wisconsin, too.
That's right. Yeah. And amazingly, some of those fake electors are still in very prominent positions. One of the fake electors, a guy by the name of Robert Spindell, he's a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which helps write voting rules for the state, which oversees state elections. So there's been very little accountability.
He's also a delegate at the RNC this year.
He's also a delegate at the RNC. So, I mean, it just goes to show you, if there's going to be some crazy anti-democratic scheme in the Republican Party, it's going to have a link to Wisconsin. And it's probably going to start in Wisconsin or at least be one of the key places where it originates. And so I think Wisconsin Republicans have had a blueprint for minority rule for over a decade and a half. And that is something that just keeps getting increasingly influential within the Republican Party, even if it's repudiated on a statewide level.
After the break, the Democrats take back control, sort of.
Part of the way Republicans were able to maintain control in Wisconsin was because they had help from the Supreme Court, which leaned conservative. That didn't really pay off for them in 2020 when Trump's case in front of the Supreme Court, it didn't get past them. But last year, things really changed for them at the court. Can you explain how this became another sort of push and pull, this time between Republicans and Democrats?
It was a huge deal because in April of 2023, Wisconsin elected a new justice, Janet Protasiewicz, who gave progressives on the court a 4-3 majority for the first time since 2008.
In a race that set spending records and turned out nearly 2 million voters statewide.
Now, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is technically nonpartisan, but it's very clear that there are progressive justices and conservative justices, and the conservative supermajority, which had ruled for a decade and a half, they had basically rubber stamped all of the things the Republican legislature and Scott Walker wanted to do. The gerrymandering, the voter suppression, the union busting, all of that stuff, they had rubber stamped. And so this was a huge deal because the election of Janet Protasiewicz and the new progressive majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court was then able to strike down the gerrymandered maps that were the heart of Republican power in Wisconsin for so long.
Yeah, if I was a Republican in Wisconsin, I feel like I would be feeling the heat right now.
Yeah, well, remember, they tried to impeach that newly elected progressive justice because she had called the redistricting maps rigged and then didn't recuse herself from the case. Now, she basically argued that judges are elected in Wisconsin, and so people take positions on things all the time.
The criticism is, if she's telling you what her values are, she's telling you what she's going to do. Certainly, I've heard the criticism, but I think voters want to know. I mean, these issues are really, really on the forefront. They want to know what kind of values a Supreme Court justice is going to bring.
So they didn't end up impeaching her because it was so blatantly anti-democratic. I think it would have backfired. But nonetheless, there's been a lot of pressure on them to try to strike back in some way, either to try to impeach the newly elected justice on the state Supreme Court. They've tried to impeach the executive director of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. I mean, whenever there's something that goes against Republican interests, Republicans don't accept it. They try to figure out some way they could subvert it.
Can we talk about the decisions this new Supreme Court has made? Like, we've talked about how the Supreme Court got involved in the gerrymandered maps. And I know in February, the legislature approved new maps in Wisconsin. How different are these maps? How much of a change do you think they'll make?
Very different. Now there's going to be competitive elections at the state legislative level in 2024 for the first time in a decade and a half. That is a huge development in Wisconsin. Wisconsin's basically been a democracy-free zone at the state level since 2010. And now people view the legislature as something of a toss-up. And there's a number of competitive districts, which is a really big change from years past. In years past, I could count the number of competitive districts in Wisconsin on one hand. Now I need, you know, octopus hands to be able to count the number of competitive districts that there might be in the state.
The Supreme Court in Wisconsin also weighed in on how people in Wisconsin can vote, allowing voters to use drop boxes. Why was that a big deal?
It's a big deal because a lot of people used drop boxes in Wisconsin in 2020.
So many people used them, in fact, that Wisconsin Republicans put drop boxes in their crosshairs. In 2022, the state Supreme Court was still controlled by conservatives, and it ruled to significantly reduce the number of drop boxes used in the state. This recent ruling from a Supreme Court with a newly Democratic majority was reversing that previous decision. Again, Ari says, it's all of a piece.
Clearly, this is part of an overall Republican effort to try to target the voting system in lots of different ways. And part of that is trying to make voting more difficult, trying to take away options for how people can vote. Another way is trying to take control of the election system, trying to put people that believe in the big lie in charge of how elections are run and certified, so that if a Democrat wins, elections won't be certified. We certainly have seen that effort in Wisconsin, in addition to a lot of other states. So I think Wisconsin fits into this broader Republican effort to try to not only make voting more difficult, but to try to subvert the voting and election system to benefit the GOP.
You know, I'm thinking back to the election workers we've spoken to in Wisconsin, who are, they're going to have to administer whatever takes place in October and November. Are they being supported? Like, I just sort of wonder, are we really expecting them to keep the peace, even though more and more Americans are viewing them as enemies?
The election workers in Wisconsin and around the country, they're exhausted. And I think nowhere are they more exhausted than in Wisconsin. I mean, you have seen a concerted effort in Wisconsin to try to scapegoat nonpartisan election officials. Republicans have tried to impeach the nonpartisan head of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which oversees state elections, someone who was appointed by Republicans in the legislature. And these election officials have gotten death threats. They've been the subject of so many conspiracy theories, and it's just really unfortunate what's happened to them. I mean, people stepped up to try to help people vote and run elections in a smooth manner, and they've essentially been terrorized for over 4 years. And so I think there's a lot of burnout. You've seen a lot of turnover in places like Milwaukee in terms of who's running elections. A lot of people don't want to do it anymore. A lot of people are scared. And even those who are still doing it, they've had to have an incredible amount of fortitude to push forward in their jobs in the face of these threats.
In some ways, talking to you, I feel like the Republican stranglehold on Wisconsin's politics has loosened. But back in the spring, you wrote a piece for Mother Jones called Why the Big Lie is Still Dominating Wisconsin Politics. So I guess I'm curious, like, how is the big lie, the lie that the election was stolen in 2020, still dominating in Wisconsin?
It's dominating in Wisconsin because it's dominating the Republican Party there. And basically, you cannot be a prominent Republican in Wisconsin without at least flirting with the election deniers, if not outright becoming one of them. So two things are happening in Wisconsin that are kind of at odds with each other. One, the state is becoming less Republican. At the same time, the Republican Party is becoming a lot more extreme than it otherwise would have been, to the point where people like Scott Walker, who at one time personified this hard-edged Republican Party, probably are thought of as mealy-mouthed moderates today, just because they might acknowledge a Democratic victory, for example. So the Wisconsin Republican Party is being pushed in a really radical direction. And I think you're going to see a reflection of that at the Republican convention in Milwaukee.
How does that set things up, though, for November 2024? I mean, I don't feel great after talking to you.
Well, I mean, I think Wisconsin is once again going to be home to a lot of fights over voting. And if the election is close, I think you should expect a lot of litigation, really pitched fights over the results, and a situation where one party, the Republican Party, has radicalized against democracy so dramatically that they have a very hard time acknowledging, if at all, that any kind of democratic victory is legitimate.
Yeah. Is Wisconsin prepared to deal with that? I mean, a recent Atlantic piece basically made clear that the Trump campaign is really focused on election integrity. They want to have people watching people voting. They want to have lawyers on retainer, training for poll monitors. They're talking about 100,000 volunteers organized to watch outside voting precincts, tabulation centers, elsewhere. That's a lot to go up against. Again, like those clerks, like, yeah, they're just,
I mean,
a
we'll
few
see
of
if
them.
It, we'll see if it materializes. But certainly the Republican Party is a lot more organized on the election integrity front than they were in 2020. Everything was very much seat of their pants in 2020, and they really didn't have a strategy to contest the election. Now they do have that strategy to contest the election, and they've essentially workshopped it and refined it since 2020. And that big lie movement in the Republican Party has gotten a lot bigger and stronger. And Wisconsin is one of those states that's become a focal point for this strategy.
If someone listening to us maybe thinks to themselves, okay, well, here's what's happening in Wisconsin, but how does that apply to me? Like, it's just one state. What would you tell them?
Well, it's a microcosm of the Republican strategy nationally. So they're certainly doing it in other battleground states as well, and probably in non-battleground states. And I think Wisconsin plays such an outsized role because what happens in Wisconsin affects the rest of the country. It's such a pivotal swing state. It's really almost impossible to imagine the next president caring the Electoral College without winning Wisconsin. So it's such an important tipping point state that whatever happens in Wisconsin at the state level has major national ramifications.
And it's just a few votes that separate the winner and the loser each time at this point.
Yeah, and every election is decided by 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 votes. A guarantee that unless it's a landslide election, it's going to be very close.
Ari Berman, I'm really grateful for your time and your reporting. Thanks for coming on the show.
Always great to talk to you. Thanks so much, Mary.
Ari Berman is the national voting rights correspondent at Mother Jones. He's also the author of Minority Rule, the right-wing attack on the will of the people, and The Fight to Resist It. And that's our show. If you're a fan of What Next, the best way to support our work is to join Slate Plus. Go on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to find out how. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Anna Phillips, and Madeline Ducharme. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you back here next time.